Our verse for the day, Hebrews verse 7, chapter 11, verse 7. By faith, Noah, being warned about things not yet seen, in reverence prepared an ark for the salvation of his household, by which he condemned the world and became an heir of the righteousness which is according to faith.
But it is odd on a day like today, when we're in the midst of this storm, that our theme, that our topic is Noah. As we're splashing through the puddles on the way here, as we're anticipating more rain coming with this atmospheric river that's rolling in, it's kind of one of those weird things that lines up this way. Hey, you know, I was talking this week. We were talking about the weather and how the rain will. I live on a little cul-de-sac over by the high school, and I was talking to Val this week, and we were saying, you know, how the high school is affected when we get some rain. You know, it becomes puddles and islands, and some classrooms become islands surrounded by a sea of puddles. And we're thinking, man, what happens if this atmospheric river is all they predict, and the rains come down and the waters rise up? I mean, you know, the court gets full of water and I can't drive. What do you do? And Val said, don't worry. If you need a boat,
I know a guy.
That's right.
I'll be here all week.
Just what we need. I shouldn't be encouraging this now, should I? But that does kind of lead us into our discussion today, our consideration of what God has for us in this 11th chapter of Hebrews, this hall of faith, all these examples of great faith from throughout history that are listed here for us as kind of the keys for us to understanding not only what faith is, but how faith can be applied to our life and how we can grow in our faith. That's what Hebrews 11 is all about. And as we continue on in this, we want to just kind of stick with that theme. And today we get a chance to look at Noah. He is the third example in this list. It's a long list. If you've not read through Hebrews 11 yet, I would encourage you to take a look and maybe this week open up and find Hebrews 11. Read through, hear all the various examples and the ways that they demonstrate faith that we can begin to apply to our life. Today is Noah. Yeah, as Val said, I'm just going to hit it again. This verse is really packed, but the story is far bigger than just what the verse grabs for us. In verse 7 of Hebrews, as was just read for us, by faith, hear this, because this is the key for us and for this writer. All of us know the story of Noah. I'm going to bet that everyone here knows the story of Noah. But the reality is that often we overlook the key that makes the whole story work. I mean, we think about this big boat. We think about all the animals that come. We're thinking about the impossibility of a man doing something this large. And we think about how chaotic and how broken and how sinful the world had become that God would want to wash that away with a flood. We think about the rainbow and the promise that God has made. We have all these, you know, big picture things out there that this story kind of grabs up for us. But the author of Hebrews says that the main point of the story is faith. Is faith. And it is all hinged. All of these things, all these incredible aspects of the story that we are so familiar with, all hinge on one thing: Noah's faith. By faith, Noah, when warned about things that he had not yet seen, in holy fear, built an ark to save his family. You see, this is an act of faith that sometimes we get kind of caught up in the whole story, everything from God's wrath to God's provision to all the cool things about, yeah, what happened to the unicorns? Yeah, see, I know there's someone who wondered that. What happened to the unicorns? Did they, you know, they not get a ticket? Did they not get a ticket? They didn't know a guy. Thank you, Scott. But it's faith that the Bible says is the key ingredient here for us. He does something that's incredible. He does something that feels like it's impossible. But we have to make sure that we see the spotlight is on his faith. This is what enables him to do the impossible. This is what enables him to do what everyone else thought was crazy. This is what enables him to do what he probably said, you want me to do what? You want me to build a big ark? Huh? But he does the impossible. And you think about it. You think about all the logistical problems that would happen in a situation like this. Because, you know, he had never built an ark before. He didn't even have YouTube to see how others have built arks in the past. He didn't have anything to go on to be able to say, how am I going to do this? All he had is what we're going to read here in the backstory. The backstory is going to begin in Genesis chapter 6. But I love this. I saw this just this week on Facebook. It was a photograph from the days of Noah. And of course, it's Mrs. Noah doing what Mrs. Noah always does. She always gets depicted kind of poorly. Whose bright idea was it to put the ark animals alphabetically? I hope you can see that. He had the ants next to the ant eaters. But of course, why wouldn't you? And next to the antelope. But that's okay. That's not really a part of the story. But how do you do something as once in a history as this? And that's what we want to take a look at today. And look at the part that faith plays in it all. Okay, we're going to look at Genesis 6. And again, we're going to just turn back for those who would like to turn back. Otherwise, you can just hear part of the story. It goes from Genesis 6 through Genesis 9. So it is this, unlike Enoch and unlike Abel. There's a lot of material here to work through. In verse 9, it's not on the screen. It'll just be here. You'll have to listen to me or read it along with me. In verse 9, it begins the account of Noah and his family. Noah was a righteous man, blameless among the people of his time. He walked faithfully with God. Where have we heard that phrase before? Yeah, this goes back even into Enoch. We talked about last week that he walked faithfully with his God. Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight and was full of violence. Sounds like the world I know today. And God saw how corrupt the earth had become, for all the people of the earth had corrupted their ways. So God said to Noah, I am going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them, and I am surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make for yourself an ark of cypress wood and make rooms in it and coat it with pitch inside and out. This is how you will build it. Again, didn't have YouTube, didn't have a game plan, didn't have a blueprint. All he had was this. This is how you will build it. The ark is to be 300 cubits long. If you don't know, that's a long way. 50 cubits wide, 30 cubits high. Make a roof for it, leaving below the roof an opening 1 cubit high all around. Put a door in the side of the ark and make lower, middle, and upper decks. I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth and destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has breath and life in it. Everything on the earth will perish, but I will establish a covenant with you and with you who will enter the ark, and you and your sons and your wife and your sons' wives with you. You are to bring into the ark 2 of every living creature, male and female, to keep them alive with you. 2 of every kind of bird, every kind of animal, and every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you and be kept alive. You are to take every kind of food that is to be eaten and store it as food for you and for them. Now, here we go back to the ants and the ant eaters. Maybe he brought more than 2 ants. But they may have gotten away. I don't know. They may have been eaten. You know, their food. Okay, but here's the key. Verse 22. Because you get this long description. It says, Noah did everything just as God commanded him. This becomes the key for the whole Noah story. Honestly, I think this is it. Now, it's going to have repetition in a moment. It's going to say later on in chapter 7, it'll say the same thing, that he did everything that the Lord commanded him. And we see that repetition popping up. And we see that this becomes the key for Noah. To understand Noah or what the story is about, It's about a man who by faith did what God asked him to. A man who by faith did what the Lord was commanding him to do. The reason that Noah is in this Hebrews 11 list of the faithful is not because Hebrews author wants us to become boat builders, but the Hebrews 11 author wants us to recognize that when we say we have faith, part of what that means is that we need to do what God commands us. Otherwise, we're just living by sight. We're not living by faith. Otherwise, we're just living for ourselves. We're not living for something beyond ourselves. It is only as we begin to obey his commands that we are following the steps of Noah. And that's what Noah's story is about. By faith, Noah heard from God and he built the ark. This becomes the pattern that the author here of Hebrews wants us to take in. Again, none of us are invited. Maybe we are. I haven't heard God tell me to go and build a big boat. But I do know that I'm invited to walk in obedience to what he commands of me. So what does God command of us? If the goal of Hebrews 11 is not to get us all to make boats for ourselves, but to follow what God calls us to, what does God call us to? You know, there's a lot of things, and we can go a lot of different directions, but the one I want to focus on today is the key, I think, to unlocking what it means for us to walk in obedience to God. One of the things that God said, and especially in the New Testament, we find this out. When all the commands of the Old Testament come down, we could all boil them down, and they fall into the category of really two, right? Loving God and loving your neighbor. So when Jesus is asked, or when Jesus just simply says, "This is my new command I'm going to give to you," what was his new command for all of those who would be following after him? Anyone know? Yeah. John 13 says this, "A new commandment I give to you." This is the one that Jesus is going to lift up out of all the things that the Old Testament might have. Jesus grabs this one and lifts it up. "A new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another." You see, this is the beauty of that whole commandment, is that he's not going to just tell you to go do something he's not willing to do. In fact, he is calling us to do something that he has already demonstrated what it means and what it looks like to do it. And he says, this is something that's going to go against your nature. Other people may think you're silly. Other people may think you're crazy. You may think it's impossible to love some people because some people are just hard to love. But what's your command? To love one another. You know, this is the beauty. Do you think that Noah, when he heard what God told him to do, said, "Oh yeah, sure, I'll do that"? I think he probably said something more like this: "I can't do that. That's impossible. Think of all the problems I'm going to have, all the things that are going to be in the way. There's no way." It's not unlike when God says he wants you and I to be able to love one another. And by the way we love one another, guess what? Everyone will know that you are my disciples if you follow my command, if you do what the world may think is silly, if you do something that you think is impossible, it runs against your grain, it's just not realistic. If you do that, then the world will know that you are my disciple. And this isn't just one verse. Again, I mentioned a couple already. You know, you look through the whole New Testament, and I love this. When you see that the New Testament has a theme and it kind of comes back and it comes back and it comes back, it is so that we will begin to learn something. They say that repetition is the key to learning. Let me say that again. Repetition is the key to learning. And we see that as we look at this command all the way through. 27 times throughout the New Testament, every significant writer in the New Testament picks up on the same thing, brings it somewhat, in some way to us, whether it be Jesus who says that this is my command, that you must love each other just as I have loved you, or whether it be the Apostle Paul who calls us to serve one another humbly in love, or whether it be Peter who says that we should love one another and be compassionate and humble, or whether it be John who says love one another just as he commanded us to love. Everyone, as you look throughout this New Testament, over and over and over again, if you were to read through your New Testament, you would be saying, wait a minute, I've already read that. Why? Because this repetition is the key to learning. If there is something the New Testament wants to get through to us, the hard thing for us is to say that what we are called to do is, yes, to receive the love from God, but also then begin to love one another in a way that is not natural, that's not normal. Sure, we love those who love us. Sure, we may love those in our family or maybe our neighbors, maybe the folks who sit in the pews with us, but we are called to love one another in a way that goes beyond that. That's why it is the greatest commandment. That's why it is the most difficult thing for us. Because out of our own selfish nature, we tend to limit the way we give ourselves away. But the church, folks, here it is. This is going to be the bottom line. The church does not exist for our comfort. This is a newsflash that we need to get a hold of. That when we talk about being Christians, or when we talk about being the church, that we do not exist for our own comfort, but we exist primarily to reveal God's love to the world. And we do that in the way that we love one another. By this, the world will know that you are my disciples. Okay, so how can we love better? How can we give ourselves away more completely? How can we do this in a way that represents the kind of giving away that Jesus did for us? You know, maybe I'm going to throw some things out there that are simple. I've been so impressed in this last week. I'll be honest with you, last week, week and a half. We've had some issues within the church body, and sometimes I think that's a horrible thing that we see crisis come in people's lives, but it also affords the church to be the church to them in those moments of their crisis. I already mentioned that the group that went down on Friday night, braved the weather, went down to the homeless shelter, provided dinner, provided conversation, provided care. What a beautiful thing. Already mentioned we're praying for Dick and for Val in their time of his recuperation. But what a beautiful thing in the midst of the crisis that was going on, that Dick had to be in the hospital and have surgery and then to come home to be cared for, that the church is able to step up. I want to say thanks to all those who made the trip up to visit with Dick to encourage him. Those who went up to help ferry Val back and forth, because quite honestly, Val's not in a place where she can be driving by herself up to the hospital. All those who brought meals over, both while Dick was in the hospital and when he's been home. This begins to be ways that we show that we care, show that we love. Making that phone call, stopping by for a visit, over and over and over again, we have the opportunity to say, I know I got a lot of things on my plate today, but I'm going to demonstrate love. And in that love, we are showing that we are Christ followers. There's a young lady who's just begun coming to church. She's not here today, but I'll just put it out there. I know that she is just getting established. She's got three little kids, and they're just got their first apartment in a long time. They moved out of the JMJ house when she just had her little boy. And a number of folks heard about the need. I mean, hallelujah. But when you don't have anything but your suitcase to fill it out, how do you make it into a home? And then I heard of all these folks who kind of stepped up, caught wind of that and said, I've got this, I've got that, and began to furnish this apartment for this young woman and her three children. That's what love looks like. Someone who doesn't really know the church, doesn't really maybe even know Jesus completely yet, but is still coming to find out what it means to be loved by those around her in a tangible way, because it's a reflection of this love which Jesus loves us with. It's offering to give someone a ride when they can't get someplace. It's offering to go out of your way when someone else. It's that willingness to say, I will pray for you. And really, you do. There is things that all of us can do, small and simple ways, that say there is a love in me because of what has been placed in me that I will give away, and I will do that kind of love. And our church will be known by this way we love, and Jesus will be seen because the whole world knows that people don't do this without another motivation. So this becomes our command. I hope that each and every one of us, as we get ready to go today, will not walk away saying, yes, I'm going to go home and start crafting my boat. But I hope every one of us will say, out of the love which God has given to me, how can I reflect that love to somebody else in a way that feels like love to them without anything expected in return? Again, Jesus said, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And again, that's without any expectation, anything back, simply saying, I will give. Part of that, what we're representing, celebrating communion. And communion at its heart is a symbol of that. It says, for God so loved the world that he gave his one and only son. It says that Jesus so loved you that he gave up his life, that the body represented in the bread was broken for you, and the blood represented in the cup was poured out for you out of his love for us. It's that kind of sacrifice that we're going to celebrate here in a minute. Sacrifice that makes us the beneficiary. But I want to again encourage you to know that as beneficiaries of that love, we are now responsible to be bearers of that love and to share it with others.